You are listening to episode 127 of the Furlow Bros Tech Podcast. The winner of Best Technology goes to...
Episode 127 of the Furlow Bros Tech Podcast. Today is March the 2nd, 2014. I'm Matthew Dean Furlow, and this is the nominee for Best Supporting Co-host, James Furlow.
And the winner is James Furlow. Dude, boom. Check this out. I'm eating this muffin.
Whoa.
And there's like a cavern where there should be a blueberry. There's a big cavern of nothing.
Blue dye.
I feel cheated.
That is
I'm going to deduct a couple calories from my count on this.
Yeah, good luck.
I don't think it fully counts. Man, unbelievable.
You're right. And you know what the best part about that is? Where a blueberry muffin carries most of its calories is in the blueberry, not in the butter-laden bread around the blueberry.
Right. Exactly. Mm. Yeah, so what are they doing right now? Is it Oscars, Emmys?
Oscars. It's Oscars. The Oscars right now.
And I think I read that they already know who won overall or something. But
do they? Oscars 2014.
Didn't they?
Well, they'll know by the 28th Oscars. Best Picture, 12 Years a Slave. Best Actor in a Leading Role, Matthew McConaughey. Best Actress in a Leading Role, Kate Blanchett. Best Actor in a Supporting Role, Jared Leto. Best, I can't believe, what's his name? That one guy with the Titanic. DiCaprio.
Leonardo
didn't win anything. I'm actually kind of surprised.
Was he in a movie?
Yeah, Wolf of Wall Street and The Great Gatsby.
Oh.
Best animated feature, Frozen, of course.
Shocker.
I know. Best original. This is the classic. Best original song, Let It Go by Frozen.
Let it go.
Is that how it goes?
I think that's part of it. That's part of the chorus. Yeah. I bought that song, so. There's validation right there.
Yeah. I was going to say, obviously, that one was the easy winner for that kind of stuff.
So how about this? I'm just going to do it since... I'll wait. We'll talk about Disney a little bit.
Okay. All right. Yeah, seriously. Don't get ahead of yourself. This is the pre-show.
It ties in with Frozen.
I know. It's coming. Don't worry. But this is the part of the show where we talk about things that have nothing to do with technology and usually have everything to do with movies.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Do you ever
you've joked about starting up a website. I won't give the name because it's an awesome name.
Thank you.
But the basic premise of it is that you review trailers and talk about the movie
trailers, yeah.
No. You don't even talk about the movie. You review the trailer
the quality
like
of the movie trailer.
Review movies.
Right.
Oh, that was a really good voiceover. Oh, I like those cutscenes, stuff like that.
Exactly.
So what I feel like is that these opening minutes is that way of feeding that need and desire of yours.
Yeah, pretty much.
So that's how I interpret that.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, related to needs and desires, and being off topic, we hung out with some friends last night. We went over to their house and we played Creationary.
I've heard of that.
Darn fun game. Think Pictionary with Legos.
Ooh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah. Pretty fun. So we went and played Legos. They saw the Lego movie. Again, they're like our age. And they're like, dude, it's fantastic. You got to go see it. I was like, that's right, Jess. That's right.
They were like, we saw it
in 3D because it's Legos. Now we're losers.
What? Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
It took me like so long to convince Jesse to go watch Frozen. When finally got her, I was like, dude, we're going to Disney World. I feel like you should know about this movie before we go to the place that created the movie. And so she was like, she's listening. She goes, so you're telling me we're going to Legoland?
Dude, it's, James,
dude, that would be,
it's,
that
it's would worth be awesome. It. If that's what it takes, it's worth it.
Yes, Jesse, that is exactly what I am saying. We should go watch the movie, and then we will go to Legoland.
Don't tell her it's like later on in life.
Yeah, yeah, I don't know. An unspecified date in the future.
Yeah, yeah.
That movie is.
But anyways, thought you would appreciate that. Creationary. I want to buy it. It's actually been on my wish list because someone talked about it, and I went, that sounds like fun. And now that I've played it, I can verify that, it is indeed fun.
Not only does it sound fun, but it is fun. So it's actually a Lego-branded game. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
And how much does it cost?
Not a clue. Probably nothing. Not cheap.
It's retiring soon.
It's ooh, free.
You better jump on that, man. You can't even buy it through the Lego store anymore.
Huh. Oh, I've got it on my Amazon wish list.
$28.99. That's not bad. Not bad at all. Cool. Very cool. Well, so believe it or not, we actually got a lot to talk about this week other than movies and Legos and stuff. And this week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera, or as we like to say, the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and, of course, the technology that they are developing. Before we get into the heart of the show, we have a short disclosure that we want to give you. And by we, I mean James.
There we go. I was like, do you have something to share?
I do.
I work for HP, but I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions.
Hughie Packard. Yeah, so I'm the one who gets to be honest. No. Wait, your disclosure basically just said you can be honest. If you want to follow us throughout the week, we're on all sorts of social networks and stuff. My primary two are Twitter and Netflix. Not Netflix. Instagram. That was weird.
Wow.
Yeah, that was really weird.
Next Wigan.
Yeah,
wow, exactly. That's weird.
That was it. My handle for Instagram is NextWiggin4. NextWiggin4. Twitter is at Matthew D. Furlough. That's how that rolls.
I am at James Furlough.
Boom. And on the Twitter.
JamesFurlough.com.
And, if you want to get all sorts of more information about us, about the show, about everything we talk about, go to furloughbros.com. That's the show website. There you got links to the YouTube videos if you're coming from the podcast, links to the podcast if you're coming from YouTube. You can get show cuts, which are the topics broken down into bite-sized pieces if you don't want to listen to the whole 2 hours in one shot. I was doing a little math today. We're on episode 127. We talk about 2 hours per episode. That's like 250 hours of people talking. That's that's crazy. I mean, recorded hours. But you can check that all out there. And we also put links to all of the articles that we talk about and so many videos and stuff that ends up there. It's just a great resource if you want something interesting. And this week, we have got interesting stuff. And so highly recommend it. Go check it out.
There has been more than one occasion where I'm like, you know, someone will reference some tech thing, and I'll be like, this sounds really familiar. I have talked about this. And I will search the site and find the article and go, here it is. I knew we talked about it.
Nice. So,
yeah, I use it.
Yeah, me too. I like to show it to people. Just be like, it's awesome. Check it out. So, yeah. Oh, you know what I didn't? Oh, shoot. This is usually the part of the show where we do our first article, and I forgot to highlight our first article. So,
I had hinted at something Disney, and this is kind of cool, actually. They're debuting, it's like a Disney Anywhere. Well, it's Disney Movies Anywhere. And so it's this website / app. I have no idea what the URL is for the website because they don't actually have it. Here we go. It's appstore.com/Disney.
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
Search the App Store. It's pretty easy.
Yeah. So essentially, you can buy. Can you rent? You can I don't see the word purchase. You can buy movies, any of their 420 films.
Wow, that's a lot of films.
And watch them. And they've got, it's like, it's the Disney vault, essentially. Pirates, Mary Poppins, Little Mermaid, Tangled, Nemo, Toy Story 3, Jungle Book, Wreck-It Ralph, Up, Tinkerbell. I don't know. They got Pirates. So am I guessing Narnia's?
No, I'm looking at it. Definitely got Narnia right there.
So here's what's cool about this. A, if you sign up – let me say what's also cool about this is that if you buy a movie through that service,
yeah,
you can also link your iTunes account, and it'll just download it on the iTunes for you.
See, now, and that to me was the important one, because I've got – obviously I've got the Apple TV rolling up in here if you listen to this show at all. So if I'm going to buy – you know, I don't mind buying Iron Man 3 through this service, but I want to be able to, you know, get it on the YouTube or on the iTunes. So the fact that I can get it on iTunes, it's perfect.
And by the way, if you sign up for it and connect it to your iTunes account, they'll give you The Incredibles for Frizzle.
Really?
Yep.
Wait. So how do you get The Incredibles for free? Just sign up.
There you go. All you got to do is create an account.
Okay.
And then connect it to your iTunes account. And you get a free copy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's pretty low bar, which means you probably are accepting to get emails the rest of your life or something.
Well, whatever. In the modern age of decent, you know, spam, you know, sorting, you don't know how to deal with a little bit of Disney spam. You don't deserve an email account. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, unsubscribe. It's easy. So, yeah, but pretty cool. And what they're saying is they're doing it with iTunes for now, and they're trying to team up with other service providers, I can say it, to further stretch it. So I could see where eventually that becomes available in the Play Store, in the Amazon Store, other stores, I don't know. But, yeah. You know, where it becomes available for, like, on Chrome or something, or Chromecast, I mean. And, you know, you're watching that, but it's this idea. So what they're kind of doing is they are centralizing all of their movies, saying, hey, come here, buy it here. We can promote it to you from here. But then we recognize that you don't want to be stuck in our browser or on our app. You want to watch it where you're at. So we're also going to make it available to you through these other places. And it's kind of weird. It's their way of taking control of the media again without asking for 100% control.
Yeah,
it's an interesting shift.
It is an interesting shift, and one that I suspect they'll do well at, just because, you know, it's what they want, and they play pretty well with Apple, and I'm sure Apple will, you know, will like this. So it's a good way to start, you know, that process.
Well, and my experience has been, for the most part, Disney's pretty smart.
Yeah.
You know, and so, like, you know, so they do stuff. Like, one of the things they're adding is you can add parental restrictions. And so you can lock an iPad Touch so it can only play G-rated movies. You can even set it up where, how do they say it? Where it's like, you can only play one movie a day.
Really?
Stuff. Yeah. So, I mean, they give you, like, almost too much control as a concerned parent. But they're just... You know, they learn, hey, this is what people want. How can we figure out ways to, you know, to make this reasonable for people? And so they're starting on the path. Now, if you buy it, it is $20, and that sounds like a lot to me for a movie, but maybe not.
Well, I mean, you think about, like, what a DVD costs. I don't know.
Well, yeah, but a download, I mean, I'm like, I like the $9.99 movies.
Oh, right, yeah.
I mean,
that's
once in a while, I'm like, all right, I'll pay the $12.99, but I don't like it.
Yeah, they got me with the Dark Knight trilogy, because it was $30 for all three in HD. I was like, oh, okay.
What? And you didn't tell me?
I think it's still available.
I'm interested in
check
that.
Check it out, man.
I think, all right, I'm going to write this down. I do not have the HD versions. And I've actually, because I got the... How did I do this? I got the first movie as a DVD, and I eventually ripped it into my computer because I got tired of keeping track of my DVDs.
Yeah.
Which I think, you know, probably not supposed to do, but I don't feel bad about it because I bought the DVD, you know, and it's probably still sitting in my attic somewhere. So it's not HD. But what I hate about it is that if I want to watch it, it has to be on my computer.
Right.
And so I've really gotten into, like, you know, the really cool part, which is awesome, about buying from iTunes is you buy it, and you watch it, and then you delete it. And it's still there. And then the next time you want to watch it, you download it. It takes, you know, you got to wait 5 minutes and freeze up your hard drive.
That's why I do what I do. But very cool. I like that. So I'm going to pivot pretty hard from the movie. Well, I guess not that hard. But we're going to move from what's being filmed on the screen to what's actually doing the filming. And by filming, I mean recording, because it's without film anymore. So this week, there's kind of a new shift in camera technology that's going on, and it's kind of cool. Basically what it is, people are starting to talk, you know, for the last year and a half, everybody's been all about the megapixels. Obviously the Lumia.
Oh yeah. Give me some more pixels.
The Lumia 1020 sort of was the king of the megapixels. Cause they were like, with their 41 megapixel camera, just ridiculous.
Yeah. Something, you know, and awesome like that.
Yeah. One of the really cool things.
That's the only reason why you'd buy that phone, which is sad.
Well, yeah. I mean, if I were going to go with a Windows phone, that would be the one I would buy. And really and truly, I think if for some reason I couldn't have an iPhone, that was probably would probably be the phone I would go with. I actually thought it was a pretty cool.
Yeah,
phone.
You did like that phone.
I did. Yeah, I like the Windows phones. But anyways, the point is, basically, the Lumia 1020 is probably going to be the end of the line of that kind of technology, which is weird, because it kind of. It got way out ahead of everybody, and it had some really cool features. Like, one was this, like, massive digital zoom, because it had so many megapixels. Basically,
yeah, I really liked that one.
Right. Basically, what they could do is they could just, you know, any the pictures that they would download were standard size, which are, like, 10 megapixels is a pretty standard size picture, right? And so what they would do is they'd, like, if you had a 41 megapixel pixel camera, your normal picture size would be, like, every fourth pixel would be what they would capture, and they turn that into a standard size image. You wouldn't get these 41 right. megapixel images. So if you wanted to zoom, they basically just looked at smaller parts of the sensor, and everything was so packed that there was effectively a full resolution zoom, digital zoom, which was really cool, really neat. But the big problem is if you ever have picked up one of those phones with the really super high megapixels, they have like little lumps in them in where the camera is because the sensors are pretty big. They're pretty bulky. And so as a requisite, you need to do that. And the biggest problem that we were running into was that that's not a problem of the silicon chips are too big. And you know, we'll shrink them down over time. That's a limitation of the physics of a lens. You just need a certain amount of surface area in order to get that much light in there into the aperture and everything. And so it requires a certain amount of thickness, and there's a physics limitation there, that it goes beyond what we're able to manufacture. And so, you know, not necessarily as small as they could be, but they're pretty close, and yet they were still bigger than everything else. And so, you know, smart people keep looking for different options. And basically what they've come up with was this idea for a dual lens smartphone camera. One camera, two separate lenses. The conundrum raised by leaked images of HTC's forthcoming M8, smartphone. And basically what happens is you get two lenses, and generally this has been like used for like 3D stereoscopic type images, but that's not what the intention of this is. Basically what they're saying
is it could probably.
Well, yeah. The big trick here is Aquara Photonics. This is the company that's one of your big developers of it. Uses the two lenses with two different focal lengths. One lens is wide angle, while the other is at 3x zoom. This means you can switch lenses to magnify more distant subjects without resorting to digital zoom. In the test up shown in the video above, which compared dual lens system side-by-side with a traditional smartphone camera with both modules pointed at the test card about a foot away. The Core Photonics system outputted a clear 13-megapixel image regardless of whether it was at 1 or 3x zoom.
But that's kind of your choice, right? Like, you can do either 1 or 3.
No, see, that's what's cool is because they have the two different things two going simultaneously, they're talking about the fact that you get this depth of field thing and you get these transitional images, and basically what you can do is you can zoom in between those, and they will programmatically, they'll take into their little image processor core both of the sensor data, and they'll be able to output a picture that's a blending of the two different images that's a full resolution, version of the picture somewhere between the two. And I'm sure it's not perfect, but they claim it's pretty awesome. And basically what they said is, you know, not only not only does it work pretty well, but it is basically the end of the megapixel, like the giant megapixel cameras, as you're talking about. Like it's good enough where they're talking about all sorts of crazy things where it gives you really, really great depth of field because you have two different pictures. So they can do all sorts of like fading out, doing Gaussian blurs at different focal lengths automatically because you've got a depth of field. You actually know where everything is in the image. And so you can a lot of stuff that you used to have to do by hand, and very difficult, to do.
Whoa.
Images and stuff. Yeah. On top of all of this, it's small. It's a very small package, and so it fits in the standard small smartphone packages.
So this begs the question, are there any advantages to having three lenses?
Probably. I mean, it's probably...
And then how long before we've got, like, a row of lenses?
Actually, it's funny that you asked that question, James, because yeah, there are advantages to more lenses. One of the examples in one of these. Oh, where is it? Let me see if I can't do a little bit of searching. The Pelican Image 16 lenses, one camera. Qualcomm-backed Pelican Image takes a completely different approach to depth sensing.
That's a lot.
Its development of an array of 16 lenses in a 4x4 grid, each of which captures only red, green, or blue colors to produce 8 megapixel images. The process reduces noise by eliminating the crosstalk between pixels produced by regular CMOS sensors. Offset lens allow depth information to be captured passively, unlike the infrared Movidius system, enabling a variety of functions and effects. For example, Pelican can perform the same selective focus trick as the Movidius after a picture is taken, which is really cool. You can change the focus, like...
Oh, yeah, like, yeah.
Yeah. It can also bring clear images into low light and even 3D image stabilization for smooth video and decreased motion blur. The company has also shown off more drastic effects like isolating the subject using depth info, placing it into another shot. To answer your question, yeah, they're probably what it sounds like you might actually end up with is, is if this actually like goes someplace as opposed to megapixel counts. You might get lens counts, like how many lenses does your phone have? It's got like little eyeball, like a fly eyeball thing going on. So pretty cool, very cool. I like having a really good camera on my phone. So anything they can do to make it better, and keep it in the same small, sleek, beautiful package, the better. It'll be interesting. I think.
Well, yeah. As we've talked about, I've going on vacation, I'm still like, man, I feel like I should bring my big camera just in case. And,
right.
Especially for some of those far shots. But that's cool.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see when this, if when this sort of thing kind of gets integrated into, some of your heavyweight phones. It sounds like HTC is probably going to try to do this, but it's, who buys an HTC phone? And
not enough people, that's for sure.
Yeah. but it's one of those things where, if this is actually good technology and works well, You could see Samsung falling pretty quickly behind, and Apple's, you know, always looking for the best picture possible. And if this is a good solution, sort of thing, where, you know, they'll pour their engineering into it and just make a super quality picture. And I know their biggest problem so far has been the digital zoom one, or the zoom in general. That's something that they definitely have struggled with. Or I should say, they've never introduced a good solution, and they've never even tried to.
Just get closer.
Which is basically their way of saying, we don't have a good solution, so we're not going to give you a half-hearted solution. You know, as far as they're concerned, 41 megapixel camera, although it does allow you to do the digital zoom, is not a good solution because it takes over too much of the phone. And, you know, it defeats the purpose of having a small, slick device. So we'll see what they do.
Right.
But I'm sure as soon as you'll see Apple do anything, it'll be 2 years. I think Samsung will probably – I wouldn't be surprised to see Samsung try to come out with a really good camera-based, you know, sensor in a year. They usually move faster on that sort of thing. But it's cool. Very cool. Very cool. Very interesting.
Cool.
I liked it. So –
speaking of cool and interesting, Mobile World Congress is this week, which means a couple new products were unveiled, specifically with Samsung.
Yeah.
You want to talk about that?
Sure. Speaking of Samsung, so Samsung introduced the new Galaxy S5.
Wait, is the 5S or the S5?
S5.
Oh, man, I cannot wait until next year, because then they will no longer... it'll still be bad, I'm sure. But.
Well, yeah.
Because they'll finally have passed Apple.
Right.
You know, because they'll be on the 6S, and Apple will just be on the 6. And right. Then I guess maybe it's the year after that where they'll be on the 7S, and Apple will just be on the 6S.
Right.
And then it'll be okay.
Yeah. It's so stupid.
It'll never be okay.
It'll never, yeah. At that point, you know, Samsung will start to scale down their numbers so they can, you know, keep pace some more.
But the S5, huh?
Yeah, the S5, the Galaxy S5. It's the new phone coming out of Samsung and
flagship phone,
Basically, what everybody's saying is, if you like the Galaxy S4, good, because you're going to like this one. If you didn't like the Galaxy S4, too bad, because it's basically the Galaxy S4, but, you know, a little bit better.
Well, given their S4 sales, that's a good thing.
Yeah, well, S4 didn't sell as well as they wanted it to. I mean...
Oh, really?
Yeah, no, not at all.
Pretty well.
Samsung, yeah, it sold well, but didn't sell as well as they wanted it to. But they were totally conflicted because they got, you know, bashed, like, you know, over the head last year for their ridiculous, like, Broadway-style musical thing where they, like, you know, showed the phone off and everything. It was just awful. But, you know, they...
I don't even remember it. That's how memorable it was for me.
Oh, dude, it was... You don't remember? Oh, it was ridiculous. It was... I guess I did watch part of it, and it was terrible. They were trying to go toe-to-toe with the whole Apple, you know, keynote thing and try to get the same level of excitement and stuff, and it was just terrible. But this one was a much more subdued launch. They talked about a couple things. It's going to have Android 4.4 KitKat. Nice. It will indeed have a fingerprint scanner.
Whoa.
I know. Not letting Apple get away, you know, run away with that part of the field. Of course, everybody's first response was, it doesn't work that well.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's because it's like the swipey finger scanners. And they're getting better, but it's nothing special. It's not like with Apple where they refused to introduce it until it worked the way they wanted it to. And even Apple's scanners having problems. Like one of the things that, you know, they're saying that is with the Touch ID, you know, if you use it too much, it's supposed to learn, you know, it's supposed to, you know, it scans like 5 times, right? And gets a basic profile. Well, every time it scans, your finger's a little bit offset, it could get more and more of your finger. And so it actually learns your finger better and better and better as time goes on. And they said the problem is that whatever that algorithm that works on it is, it's slowly, that process can over time get it blurry and blurry and blurry to the point where it actually doesn't work as well after like 3 or 4 months, and you have to reset your fingerprint and start it over again. And they say they're putting out a software update to try to take care of that. But it's like, you know, Apple, you know, these fanatics for making technology that'll work and just simply works. Even they have a hard time with it. And Samsung, you know, basically threw this into their product at the last minute. It's an off the wall, you know, or off the shelf, fingerprint scanner. It's nothing special. It, you know, it works as well as fingerprint scanners work. And the other thing that they've done that you know, is just craziness to me. I actually wouldn't use it. Given the choice, I wouldn't use it because they've immediately opened up the fingerprint scanner to third-party access, which effectively means that where Apple, you know, went to extreme lengths to say, you know, there's no way for you to, from the operating system, get to the fingerprint data. The fingerprint data is stored in the secure enclave. It's a completely discrete part of the silicon chip. Yeah,
everyone was semi-freaking out over it.
Right, and everybody was like big NSA concerns, and like they're going to be giving all your, you know, this is great for the government, and Apple's like, it's impossible for anybody to get to it. Well, Samsung took the opposite, you know, stance on this, and were basically like, no, we're going to let everybody have access to it, which basically means if you're, you know, if from one, you know, unless they just did a terrible job of explaining the fact that, no, it was your information's safe and secure, which seems unlikely, as it seems like one of those points of interest that you'd really want to emphasize if it were true. Basically what they're doing is like, if you've got a platform that's, you know, got 90% of malware is written for Android, and, you know, you're talking about third party stuff, you download some video game app, all of a sudden it's, you know, Flappy Birds, and all of a sudden it's downloading your fingerprints and sending it to whoever they want. You're just like, oh, what the heck?
What's wrong with that?
I know, exactly. Well, yeah. And so, you know, that's I don't know. I don't know about this fingerprint.
That's concern, I guess.
Yeah. And I'm just really surprised, I guess, that, you know, that nobody cares. Nobody cares. I don't know. Whatever. Just from a security thing, you'd think that it was such a big deal just a couple months ago, 6 months ago, and now, whatever. So it's basically the same size as the Galaxy S4. It's 5.1 inches, just a tiny, teensy, it's a bit bigger. 1080p, super AMOLED screen. So naturally, it sounds like, yeah, it sounds like it's got a nice screen. It's got a 2800 milliamp hour battery, which is pointless for anybody to know about. I mean, it's got a lot of battery life. Actually, I do want to talk about that a little bit more.
Yeah, I just want to know, is that good or bad?
It's pretty good. It's definitely good. Oh, the other big thing is that it's like water and dust resistant, and which is really cool. So it's like, you can drop it in the, you know,
that is cool.
You can drop it in a bucket of water or the toilet and not destroy it, which is definitely one of those features that Android phones have been picking up on, and Apple has, you know, just been like, don't get it wet. And I'm hoping, you know, fingers crossed, Apple do something about it too, but we'll see. They, you know, sometimes they don't care. And that's not one of their priorities, as you pointed out.
That's right. It's a good word.
Yeah. Another thing that they got going is that they're definitely up in their game with the health technologies and stuff. So it's got a heart rate monitor built into it, like right next to the camera. Like, you can measure your heartbeat with your phone, which is kind of cool.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's got a 16-megapixel camera. What was the other thing? As far as just like your, you know, baseline specs go, it's got a 2.5 gigahertz Snapdragon 801 processor with 2 gigabytes of RAM, IR remote, NFC Bluetooth 4.0, Bluetooth Low Energy, all your stuff. It's got all your stuff, all your normal specifications. Apple fanboys have been ripping it up because it doesn't. It's only 32 bits. Jeez, how last year is that?
Man,
the year 64 bits.
2010 but, called. And they want their phone back.
Exactly. It's not even worth the time of day. You know, but it's funny. I mean, like
Dick called. That, by the way, there was a pun in there. Just
yeah. That's you know what?
Point that out.
Good point. Yeah, which it's funny. I mean, it's one of those things where it's like Android's not even built for a 64-bit 64-bit processor, and everybody's sitting there. Everybody when Apple came out with the iPhone 5S, it had a 64-bit processor. Everybody was like, oh, you know, that's going to be the first thing that Samsung does is put a 64-gig or a 64-bit processor in there, even though it'll be pointless because they'll have to. You know, emulate a 32-bit operating system in order to make it work, and it won't have any advantage. It'll just cost more. And guess what? Samsung's not a bunch of idiots, and that's exactly – they're like, yeah, there's no point to have a 64-bit processor when you have a 32-bit operating system. So I guess we'll just put a 32-bit operating system in there, you know, chip in there. So yeah, they stuck with it. There are, it looks like I was reading somewhere there for other parts of the world, and I don't understand why they won't sell them to America because I think they don't like us. They're crazy, like 8-core chips and stuff. Those will be, they will sell Galaxy S5s that have the better, you know, super core phones. But once again, you know, it's nothing in Android is written for massively multi-threaded programming. So you're not necessarily getting any performance bumps that you want. You're just spending more money on it, with very few exceptions. And if you're looking for that kind of a specialized hardware, cause you have that kind of specialized software, you know it and you know what you're looking for and it's not that big of a deal. So I don't know. It seems to me like, you know, everybody's kind of bashing on them for, you know, taking it very conservatively, but I'm glad to see it. I don't think that it did anything great for Samsung last year where they just introduced a whole slew of new features and you know, it turns off the phone when you look away from it, which is like the coolest of the new features that everybody, you know, they showed off. Whereas this is, I think, what people really want is they want, you know, or I should say people want to be excited. They want to see new features. But I think what really sells consistently is incremental improvements. And that's exactly what this is. It's a better screen. It's a better this. It's a better that. It's got one or two new reasonable features that people actually want and use. And it'll be collecting fingerprint data for the NSA, which is nice. Mm-hmm. And
it sounds like they toned down some of their TouchWiz as well.
Yeah,
getting back to a little more Android
stock. So, you know, for me, I'm you know
looks the, nice.
I say the last Android phone I seriously used was the Galaxy S3, and I wasn't overly impressed. I didn't love the phone. I probably wouldn't go for the Galaxy S5 if I needed to. Like I've said, I'd probably go for a Windows phone. But as far as a flagship Android phone goes, it's pretty nice. It's good. It's fun. It does the job.
I'm still saying I would go with the Moto X on Republic Wireless if I were to switch over to Android.
Yeah. Hello, Moto. Yeah.
That's a cool carry phone. A camera around with me.
Yeah, right. but
oh, well. Yeah.
So that was not the only thing that Samsung announced this week.
Well, before you go on to that, tell me more about the battery life. You said that.
That's right. Sorry. So one of the things that they talked about when they talked about this phone was that it's got pretty good battery life. Not only does it have pretty good battery life, but it is like the best battery life out of any Android phone. It's ridiculous. They were talking about they've got this ultra power saving mode that can offer 24 hours of standby time on a 10% battery, which is crazy. It's got different things. This device packs a 2800 milliamp hour battery that the company claims can deliver 11 hours of video playback. What? Wow. 10 hours of – I mean – how much how much storage do you need in the phone in order to be able to store 11 hours of video playback? I mean, most people – that's the coolest part about
it, right? Well, you can insert 128 gigs sticking to it, so that's you can make it work.
That's a good point. I mean, but for me, somebody who, like, you know, who's been traveling around the world way more lately, and you get on a plane for 10 hours without any battery connections, that's awesome. That is definitely a selling point. To 11 hours. It's got 10 hours of web browsing over LTE, which, how fast would it take you to get through most of your data caps? Less than 10 hours?
Less than 10 hours.
Yeah, so this is that's super impressive. Samsung's press material also says the phone can offer 390 hours standby time with LTE on, 21 hours of talk time over WCDMA. So this thing's just basically got wicked battery life. And everyone was like, where did this come from? Because a 2800 milliamp hour battery is a big battery, but it's not a huge battery. It's not like, wow, that makes sense. Those numbers totally match up. Basically what happened was this company, or Samsung, has partnered with Lucid Logic, a company that's known, that knows a thing or two about optimizing battery life through software. And this is what's kind of impressive about it. The company has various battery-saving software technologies, including Web Extend, Nav Extend, and Game Extend, that can extend the battery of life on Android devices. Game Extend offers up to 50% more battery life during gameplay. Web Extend and Nav Extend each promise up to 25% more battery life for web browsing and GPS navigation apps, respectively, which, if you've ever used a GPS navigation app, that's really cool, too. That's what tears my batteries apart. These technologies independently determine the requirements of each type of app and whether it's a game, browser, GPS app, and optimizes power consumption. In addition to extended battery life, Lucid's battery life software solution also reduces the amount of heat produced by the device. Basically what happens is, and this is what's cool, is this Lucid Technologies, their Lucid Logic, their whole deal is they're like, this technology is cool, but it really needs to be put on the operating system level. It's got to be put deep down in the phone in order for it to work and really give you the advantages that they want. So Samsung teamed up with them. They put the two technologies together, and boom, you put a little bit bigger of battery in there and then add these cool life-extending stuff. And suddenly you have these phones that actually, you know, you can squeeze some serious battery life out of.
Cool.
I mean, a two-day phone would be a big deal, you know. And that, what I really like about it is it's all over software, you know. Apple has done some cool stuff, you know, doing it in silicon, which is really, you know, advantageous. But obviously there's always places to optimize. And so to get somebody who's in there, you know, doing it all over software is exciting, especially if you're just into the – oh, man. Sorry. Especially if you're just into the Android ecosystem and you want something that's, you know, going to be useful, you know, all over the place because, yeah, Samsung's got this for now, but it's something that other people can do without necessarily. You can do it as a software update. It's reverse compatible, which is cool. So, oh, it's cool technology. It'll be nice to – I wonder if they've got a deal with Samsung where they're exclusive or if they're – you know, you'll start to see it come in other phones too, but very neat. And that's, you know, all right, Apple, battery life bar has been set. It's time to get your game up. So then the other thing that they announced in Barcelona, and these ones are the ones that I'm actually kind of excited about. Basically they announced, 3 new Galaxy Gear watches, and this time they're not, they're not nearly as stupid and lame, which is pretty exciting. So your 3 different ones that they announced, they did the Samsung Gear 2. This one's basically a kind of cleaner version of the Samsung, just the Galaxy Gear. They got rid of the camera in the wristband, but I believe they added it into the main body of it.
It was called the Neo or something?
No. They got the Gear 2.
Oh, okay.
They got the Neo, and they've got the, the Neo in the Gear Fit. Let's see here. One of the big differences about this one is last couple of devices were running Android. These are running on Tizen, Apple, or I mean Samsung's, you know, proprietary operating system. Obviously, it'll still work with your Android phones as a sort of extension. Same basic principle as the last one, but it's not running Android. I lost it. So how do these two new gears differ cosmetically from the original Galaxy Gear that inspired them? For starters, Samsung's done away with the exposed metal screws of the Galaxy Gear's face in favor of sleeker, seamless finish and gentle blends into the band. The home button has been moved. The Gear 2 and Neo also sport a bit of user customization, as both now offer a multitude of wallpaper font options, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, I mean, basically what they're talking about is you got these two new devices, and I'm trying to figure out, I read it, I know that I read it somewhere, the difference between the Neo and the 2.
Neo doesn't have a camera, the 2 does.
Okay, is that the big thing? Okay. That's what I thought. I thought one was basically the cheap one and one was the higher end one. And so it sounds like they've just kind of pared those down. They're trying to simplify and clean up the Galaxy Gear watches. And then there's the one that everyone's actually excited about because it's not just a pointless peripheral that these other two is, and that is the Galaxy Gear Fit. In this trio of Samsung smartwatch amigos, it's kind of the oddball. With its 1.84-inch curved Super AMOLED screen and narrow focus on health and wellness. So basically, it's like where the Galaxy Gear watches are all like square. This one's like a long rectangle. The Fit, like its Gear sibling, also features a swappable strap, Bluetooth 4.0, and an IP67 rating for water resistance. Nice. Except its battery is rated for longer use, up to 4 days, which is actually in par with like what your Fitbits are doing, which I think is really important. Of the bunch, it's definitely
longer
the
than
most
a day is a great start.
Right, exactly. It's definitely, of the bunch, it's definitely the most physically attractive gear option, and the one that we could really see users embracing. There'll be no shortage of apps for consumers that plunk down. So basically, the Fit, the biggest difference with the Fit from the other two is not only does it last a lot longer battery, but it also has a pedometer built into it and a heart rate monitor built into it. So that's cool. And it's funny for me, I'm obviously I've been out, you know, openly, you know, waiting for the iWatch, you know, solution mm-hmm. to come along. Mm-hmm. But I've also really wanted a heart rate monitor. That's been a big thing for me coming all along. And I could definitely see Samsung, especially if Apple doesn't come up with a good solution, make some major inroads in the health, area here. Cause it's got a lot of cool features of, you know, combining your smartwatch stuff with your like super health, technology things. And I don't know, it's a cool offering. For me, price is obviously going to be a big thing. They haven't talked about how much it's going to cost yet. People are guessing it's going to the Fit specifically is going to try to come in at less than $200. Like say $179 is the guess. And the reason why $179 is kind of the guess of what the price point would be is because Nike, Fitbit, Jabo, they're all kind of playing in that between $100 and $200 ballpark. And so if you can play ball with them, even if you're at the higher end of it, but you do everything that those do, you do a little bit more because you do the heart rate monitor, you get better vitals, you get better statistics, and you can, you know, receive information from a smartphone, that's a pretty compelling product. And since it runs on Tizen and not Android, there's a good chance that, you know, Samsung might get a little bit creative and try to make it as a peripheral to an iPhone as well. I don't know if that's the sort of thing that they'd be willing to do, but if you were, you know,
yeah, I don't know.
I gotta say, I think it would be a huge mistake to cede that market to everybody else. You know, as you know, if they really wanted this to do well, you know, just making a basic pedometer app for the iPhone and allowing it to connect and, you know, push updates and stuff like the one that you have, Pebble Watch.
Pebble.
You know, it'd be a pretty compelling little product that they could sell, and people like me, without, you know, necessarily all the options in the world, could be very inclined to want to head in that direction. You know, it's funny. I mean, and it's funny. I at this point, I'm liking the Fitbit. I'm still waiting to see what Apple does. But, you know, you come Christmas time this year, if Apple doesn't have anything compelling and I'm bored of my Fitbit because I like new technology, you know, I could see that as being a compelling Christmas present. Sounds cool. They're, you know.
Yeah. Looks okay. They'll probably sell a couple of them.
Yeah. I'm willing to bet that they sell way more of the Fits than they do of the Neo or the 2. That would be my guess. I think most, from especially
the one that's getting the awesome reviews.
Yeah, especially
price.
What?
Part of it depends on price.
Oh, a huge part of it, but yeah, we'll see what they do. Are they smart? Are they dumb? Who knows? It's Samsung. But
yeah, it really could go either way.
Yeah. So, oh, very cool. Very, very, very cool.